Hey. So basically, first I'd like to start with kind of just your background, even like what you do and what's your, maybe even education, like kind of just some kind of context about where you could have learned, like where you're kind of influenced by.
Okay. I'm closing in on 55 years old. I was probably part of the last generation of computer people who were self-taught. There wasn't a computer science major when I was an undergrad till my very last year. So I grew up and kind of came of age in the days of microprocessors and stuff where you actually could, even as a kid, start playing with computers and not without having a fortune. And you could actually build these things because you could. They were small enough and large enough that you could do that. Worked math major, went to computer science grad school because it was easier. Worked for a while for the U.S. government doing computer security consulting stuff, and then for IBM doing product development in the research division, and then I came up here. And at Dartmouth, in our department, I'm sort of one of the systems people, and I actually put a lot of that effort into, you know, how do the things actually work. And so that background, yeah, and I guess there are several. Tom Corman, who I think worked for a long time in the industry before even going to grad school. Andrew Campbell worked. So yeah, depending who you talk to, whom you talk to as far as professors, you, that might be a relevant factor is and also their age. Did they work out, did they work when you actually had to worry about low-level system stuff? Or was it their age? So that sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay, that's some background. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so if you want, you can just go ahead and start to
say well, I guess some of the, I just actually had to explain some of this in 258 a week or two ago. I guess there's several things that fit the pattern of some puzzling, some frustrating situation you run into where we have kind of a shorthand code that refers to a story that you've never probably even heard the full story, but everyone knows what the code means. So one is, you know, oh, it's turtles all the way down, which I guess is referring to some, not Yertle the Turtle from Dr. Seuss, but I guess some apocryphal story about a young kid who says, oh, well, you know, the world is resting on the back of the turtle. Well, what's underneath the turtle? Oh, it's turtles all the way down. But the idea is that we just have these levels of abstraction, and at one point the level of abstraction may have been directly, that corresponded to a real machine, but now it's, you know, now it's an abstract level, and below that there's an abstract level, and just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yak shaving is another term. Oh, I had to do a lot of yak shaving to get this thing ready for class, this tool ready. And that, I've been told, refers to a, actually, they even found a mock, you know, these mock O'Reilly covers?
Yeah.
One about yak shaving and, you know, turtles all the way down. Apparently it refers to some kind of long story where you need to solve some important problem, and then, but that requires solving some sub-problem that's not very important and not quite as related, and then just keeps going down and worse, and finally there's a yak, and then you have to shave the yak, and then everything unwinds and you solve the problem. So when you're doing strange debugging with how the virtual machine is dealing with DNS because you need to do this one OS feature, that's yak shaving. I don't know, other jokes, humor. From poking fun at the math world, which I'd been in, and I guess our theoretician, you know, we still sort of, we in the department, some of us live in that space. You know, there, an engineer wakes up in a, room and it's on fire, but there's an empty bucket in the sink. So she fills the bucket with water and puts the fire out. A mathematician wakes up in a room, there's a fire, and there's a full bucket of water in the sink. And the mathematician, dumps the water in the sink. It's like, oh, now I've reduced it to the previous case. But I guess, you know, making fun of how in the construction of proofs, you know, of true things, the efficiency doesn't matter as much if you can just, you know, it's more concise to just glue it to something that's been done already. When I was at IBM, there was the standard, Oh, well, that's just a small matter of programming, referring to some kind of feature or thing, because on the one hand, the perception was, yeah, it is just, all you have to do is just program it, right? But it was always very complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
IBM is many, many places, physical locations, and I understand, you know, like, we were working a lot with IBM Charlotte. We didn't like the Charlotte people. Well, we did, but I mean, you know, you'd want to poke fun at them, mm-hmm. so we had to call them the Charlotteers. I understand IBM, some of the headquarters people were in Armonk, New York, and people outside, we call them the Armonkies. But that's, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So, particularly the joke, like, well, a lot of, particularly the first ones, like,
Yak shaving and
yak shaving. And even like, do you know, I mean, I've heard those before too, but like, from your, in your perspective, where, like, when would, I mean, I guess you went over, I mean, I'm actually, the one I'm interested, would you, you think you'd ever actually, like, would you like, in a sense, perform or like say the mathematician engineer joke anywhere? Like, is there a context where you'd say that, or is it just something you've heard?
No, I have said it. I can't think of what context I'll find. No, I can't think of the context. Sorry.
Yes, actually, what is that? Do you know, like, any of these? Do you have any idea where you first heard them, or anything like that?
Yak shaving, I think I heard from Sergey Bratis. I've actually looked up online, and somewhere Wikipedia claims it has an etymology from Ren and Stimpy or something. It has nothing to do with this idea of solving problems and getting harder and harder. That's part of it. Turtles All the Way Down. I don't know where I heard that. It just seemed to make intuitive sense the moment I heard it. The others, you know, I don't know. Small matter of programming is just stuff that you said that was just part of the culture when I was off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before the turn of the century in a large, older corporation. So, you know, you go talk to people in the startup world now or you know, people in Silicon Valley. There's other models, other cultural models that may have their own
humor. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea of folklore.
Yeah. There's weird stories, like, oh, there was this guy at IBM who did a lot of programming in APL, but got bored. No, APL is this weird character set.
Yeah.
He got bored with that character set, so we redefined it in terms of these different colored blobs. So he would just, like, stare at a screen with all these colors and do his programming. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
I mean, well, those are good.
There's a math one about somebody, no, it's obvious! No, it's not. And some person disappears in his office and comes out, you know, 3 days later, covered in chalk, stuff all over the board. I told you! See, it's obvious! But, I don't know. Yeah, there's.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I was... In the first minute, well, yeah. I was hoping to find some of those kind of, like, you know, mathematician, engineer, computer scientist kind of, like, you know, kind of making fun of different professions. Because those are kind of ones I was expecting to find a lot of. But I
did write a magazine sort of piece for IEEE Security and Privacy. I forget the order of the two names, but it was like, you know, Shannon is from Mars and Turing is from Venus. But it was able to get a men, you know, that alluding that men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Because I'd run into some people, some Thayer people at Dartmouth, who we were working in the same field. But there were things that they just didn't know, and things that they knew that we didn't. So generally, you know, engineers all know about it, things all about information theory and the work of Shannon, but none of them know about computability, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not that was that wasn't naturally arising folklore. That was my attempt to.
Mm-hmm.
I know people, John Thorstenson, physics professor, who's done some programming, will happily tell stories about how Tom Corman has made fun of his programming and various things about it. So there's probably maybe something there where, you know, those physicists, you know, they confuse an algorithm with a program, and you know,
those are good examples. I mean, it's actually quite a lot more than most people have.
There was a case. I wish I could remember the. No, I can't fully construct the story.
If you think that's definitely I don't know what else. I think I got most of what I wanted, like kind of the background. It's almost like when you're collecting a lot of this stuff, it's almost more in some ways like just as important to get the context of it. I mean, that's a lot.
Well, there was okay, I'm trying to, it was many years back. There was somebody who was interviewing at Dartmouth for a very senior IT position, and I wasn't sure this person really knew what they were talking about. So they were giving the candidate was giving a talk on the computer and, you know, projecting slides, and I said, oh, well, what operating system are you using and why? And the candidate said, PowerPoint. And I was discussing later and saying, they said their operating system was PowerPoint. And I said, well, they could have a point, I guess, with the idea of the incredible overly rich functionality that, you know, Windows tools at the time were doing. Folklore. Stories that are claimed to be true might not be. That there was one of the early time-sharing things at MIT when they finally shut it down. You know, 20 years later, they found a few jobs that were still waiting in the ready queue, but because of the scheduling algorithm, they just had never been run. That story is told. Doug McElroy, you should talk to. Because he was, you know Doug? You know Doug?
No.
He was the manager of the two people who created Unix.
Hmm.
So he was the first user of the first Unix and contributed a lot. But that, he was in that whole world and had stories. I found out from Doug that Ken Thompson's Trojan C compiler, have you heard of this?
Hmm.
Well, this is the Ken Thompson won the Turing Award. You know the Turing Award?
Yeah.
This was maybe in the 80s, early 80s. And in a Turing, in his acceptance speech, which then got published, he talked about, I think, Reflections on Trusting Trust, I think, is the title.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know
that.
Yeah.
And where he talked about sabotaging a C compiler so that whenever it saw a login program, it would insert a backdoor for him, and whenever it saw a compiler, it would insert these features. And I always thought that was just hypothetical, but I found it from Doug. He really did that, and it almost escaped into the real world. that was something I was sure was folklore that I was told was actually true. So that's something.
Yeah.
There are trains. There's some train detection system in Switzerland. That train with exactly 256 axles will not be seen.
Will overflow.
Yes. And just now in 258 when we were looking at, well, Lumos, but it's source code from the earlier Solaris, which was, you know, engineered for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some comments about when the amount of RAM in a machine got to be too big recently and no longer fit into a signed integer, then suddenly, you know, some implementation of an algorithm that said, oh, do we have enough memory, or should we start paging aggressively? It would just stop working, because it thought instead of having, you know, too much memory use, it thought it had a negative amount of memory use. So, oh, we're fine. So that's the comments indicate that actually happened, whether it did or not. But it's good. It's a good story. It should have happened if it didn't. Okay, there's some.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot. Actually, a lot. I mean, most people only have like one or two little things, so that's great. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that's, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to ask, but that's pretty much.
Well, we had this guy at Los Alamos, so I called the accordion man, because he would just come into offices and start talking, and sometimes he'd talk about accordions. But sometimes he'd talk about your interesting stuff. His name was Tony Warnow, and he told a lot of stories that sounded like good folklore.
Mm-hmm.
Like a random number generator that would work by detecting radioactive decay, except it was too much radiation and the thing was not sensitive enough. Oh, let's see. Yeah, I guess I'm supposed to get off of the meeting here. So what it was actually measuring was its own response time. So he liked that. He talked about some computer he fixed by turning it, rotating it a few inches. because it would crash whenever a train went by, and so you think, a wire is vibrating exactly the wrong direction. Everything he had was solo. I mean, everything Tony said was bespoke for.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay. Well, anyway,
well, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. So Doug McElroy would have. I mean, he's in his 80s now, but he literally has been around since the beginning of the field, and he has a lifetime of experience. Interesting stories.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah.